91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour we focus on South Florida's regional homeless population and how three counties work to get individuals a shot at getting off the streets. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. The reasons for homelessness varies. Addiction and mental health illness may be a cause, but there are many more reasons. More people than one would think possible are but only a missing paycheck or two away from losing their homes. Some go to shelter, some live in cars, others try to survive and panhandle on the mean streets. It isn't easy living. It's downright dangerous. Sometimes hate crimes are inflicted on sick or helpless people. So today we speak with three experts who deal with homelessness at the street level 24/7. We'll hear their story in minutes after news. Seven minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Well, this hour we get a feel for some of the approaches employed by Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade counties in dealing with homeless populations. All three of our guests have long experience with homelessness and its various stages and circumstances.
First joining us is clinical social worker Catherine Cat Hammer, the senior director of the Lewis Center in West Palm Beach. It's affiliated with the Homeless Coalition of Palm Beach County and Goodwill Industries and includes medical and case management. Welcome to you, Cat Hammer.
Hi.
Also with us is Captain Scott Russell. He's by phone. He leads the Broward Sheriff's Department's Homeless Outreach Initiative, and we'll learn more about some of the programs initiated there. Welcome to you, Captain Russell. Captain, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right, good. Also with us is Miami Police Officer James Burnett. He's the Senior Executive Assistant to the Police Chief and is the department's Homeless Coordinator. Welcome to you.
Hello.
Let me start with a question for all of you. It seems that many people have definite, one would say, misconceptions and misperceptions about the homeless population. Do you think that the plight of our homeless population is largely misunderstood by the surrounding communities and the public at large?
Yes,
Officer Burnett?
Yes, I agree. I think we need to do more education on homelessness. Homelessness can happen to anyone. Many families are one paycheck from being homeless. Homeless are Black Americans, white Americans, Hispanics, elderly, the young. It affects all of us, and we need to do what we can to help the most needy.
And Captain Russell?
Yes, I agree that certainly educating our community of the needs that our homeless population are in constant need of is going to help in any way, you know, help to end the cycle of homelessness. And is the key is the community involvement, to get in partnerships together from non-traditional law enforcement, being a part of the community, you know, services that are provided to that particular population. So working in partnerships and collaborations is key, but to understand, again, the complexity of the problems that face that homeless population, which are enormous, needs to be, I think, better communicated to the public. And we could recognize that our homeless people are not problem people, but they're rather with people with a problem.
And Catherine Hammer of Palm Beach County.
I do think there's lots of misunderstandings about who is the homeless. Everyone, anyone could be homeless, as was stated earlier. I mean, there are issues that are about mental health. There are issues about economics. There's racial disparity, issues of poverty. There's issues of trauma in people's lives.
Is there an element of the NIMBY in this also? Not in my backyard. People in general, the population, will support aiding homeless people and feeling sorry for them, but they don't want to be confronted by them or have to deal with them too up close and personal.
Well, I think that's true. I think people are fearful. Mm-hmm. You know, the assumption is a homeless person is the wino on the street, the right. Drug addict, when in truth it is people who do live check to check. and economic disparity contributes. And I think that sometimes the idea, even getting the Lewis Center open, was a issue in our community because people were fearful that the interim housing, which is a type of shelter that we have, which is not an emergency, would be full of people with drug addiction, and that it would be, you know, drug dealers and create chaos in the community. And in fact, it's people trying to get back on their feet.
I'm wondering if the three of you know in your county what percentage of the homeless population is addicted, what percentage is developmentally or mentally or physically disabled, and what percentage is just economically disadvantaged. Because it seems like all we hear about, or what most people think about, is this drug addict or this alcoholic, and that's not the biggest percentage of the homeless, is it?
Well, many of our homeless do suffer from mental illness, drug addiction, and alcoholism. But, you know, many of our homeless have master's degrees, bachelor's degree. Some cannot find employment. Some cannot find affordable housing. Some have employment, but they don't make enough to afford a house. So there are different reasons why people are homeless, and we cannot place their situation the same for everyone. In other words, there's different reasons for people to be homeless, and we need to address it case by case.
Captain Scott Russell, Broward Sheriff's Department. What are you doing in Broward that's innovative? What are you really proud of on your homeless programs?
Well, can I go back, if you don't mind, just address that a little bit, just to wash out just a little bit more. Kind of break things down. We've got two types of homeless persons out on the street. There are those who are chronic homeless persons, and those are crisis homeless persons. Most attention because of the high visibility are your chronic homeless. That, you know, and they're the ones that, the people refer to as Willie the Wino or Susie the Bag Lady. Mm-hmm. And you see them constantly in different stages of intoxication or in a psychosis. And those, again, are very complex issues that they face. And not only will one of them be a substance abuser or a mental health, they can be dually diagnosed with both conditions, which really then makes a difficult task for social service providers to address those issues simultaneously, because, you know, typically your mental health professionals don't want to address the issues of substance abuse, and then the substance abuse say, "Hey, Dale, you got to deal with medicating this person and getting them stable before we can address the substance abuse." So both of those teams have to work together, step by step, to raise that person up that ladder to success, and again, to recapture, regain their lives. So one of the things that we're really most proud of in Broward is our homeless outreach initiatives, and that's bringing together the community of law enforcement in Broward from all the different agencies to work together in partnership with social services to again address these complex issues. You know, again, the plight of the homeless has been one of our nation's most pressing social problems for decades now, and it hasn't. You know, it's been bad. It's been better. It's been bad, and it's been better. It goes back and forth, depending on, you know, the times. We get the downturn in the economy. Well, we're going to have more people on the streets, that's for sure, because you did say everybody's addressed the issue. There are people living paycheck to paycheck, families and cars or even doubled up with other family members in a house that's only suitable for one family, and you've got two families in there. So, you know, we're proud of our initiative to reach out, to connect, to be partners with the community and solving these issues. You know, we bring somebody in that's struggling with mental health issues. We know and have worked with our mental health provider, behavioral health folks, and they're the experts in the field. We just connect, and we focus on the connectivity. We need to know as law enforcement how to address these big social issues. So I think that our homeless outreach, the attitude and the cultural change that, again, homeless people aren't problem people. They're people with problems, and that comes down from the chief executive in our agency, which is the sheriff, and that's the mantra that we're marching behind. And in an effort to decriminalize the mental health issues and the homeless issues, we for life sustaining misdemeanors. So, you know, to make it just real short and concise, I think that the partnerships and the community of Broward, not just the BSO, but the community of Broward, coming together to really tackle and address these complex issues.
Kat Hammer, you wanted to add something? And also before the show, we were talking about the national average, the mental health.
Well, you know, I was struck. There is
system.
The truth is that, yeah, there is chronic versus crisis. And typically your chronic people with chronic homelessness do have co-occurring disorders. But I do want to just acknowledge how much this affects families, and how many children are homelessness and the consequence of that, and their future or success. And there is a relationship that if you're homeless as a child in the shelter system, that it can influence how well you do academically in the future. But I do want to acknowledge, I think I'm a transplant from New York, and I am very concerned about, for the very reason what the officer just talked about in terms of how we do mental health treatment and substance abuse treatment down here. We do need to treat these issues as co-occurring disorders. That means co-occurring treatment, that it's also not just about their mental health and substance abuse. Additionally, these folks tend to have lots of trauma in their lives. There is a relationship, and if folks don't understand and integrate their care, it is unlikely that we're going to have success. And I do have concerns about that the emphasis down here is still a medical model and not partnering with people as effectively as one can when people are homeless and on the street with these issues. I think we're working on it, we're getting there, but we're behind the country in many ways.
And Officer Bernard?
Yeah, I agree that we need to address the underlying causes of homelessness. And here in Miami-Dade County, through the Miami-Dade County Homeless Trust, we have the Lazarus Project that through Camilla's House and our outreach goes out every day and medicate with nurse practitioners and medicate some of the individuals that suffer from mental illness.
And they willingly accept that?
Yes, they do. It's a voluntary. It's not forced.
Right.
Yes. And we, you know, here in Miami-Dade County and through the City of Miami, the support of the chief of police and the commissioners and the city manager, City of Miami does something a little unique. Besides the continuum of care and the outreach beds, the City of Miami Police Department has 75 beds, so in lieu of making an arrest for the life conduct misdemeanors, we are placing individuals in the shelter every day.
What are life conduct misdemeanors?
Real common complaints that there's someone may be arrestable for, like, being in a park after hours, sleeping in public, obstructing the sidewalk. Those are common occurrences and complaints to the police, and so instead of taking actionable enforcement on that, We're offering shelter and assistance.
We're speaking with, that was Police Officer James Burnett. He's the Homeless Coordinator and the Senior Executive Assistant to Miami Chief of Police. Also with us, Captain Scott Russell on the Homeless Outreach Team with the Broward County Sheriff's Office Department in the Youth and Special Services Division, and Catherine Cat Hammer, Licensed Clinical Social Worker with the Senator Philip D. Lewis Center for the Homeless in Palm Beach County. We'll be right back.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Our topic today is homelessness in our Tri-County area. Catherine Cat Hammer is from Palm Beach County, Captain Scott Russell from Broward, and James Burnett from Miami-Dade County. Call to our listeners. Would you like to phone in? Have you experienced homelessness? How did you get back on track, if you have? Or you'd like to perhaps call in and comment on our discussion with a question or comment? That's easy enough. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN, or email, that's radio@WLRN.org.
Officer James Burnett, I understand you're also known as St. James by many in the community. Could you tell us about your background, your origins, and how you first started getting involved in this with the homeless?
Well, I've been employed with the City of Miami for about 9 years. I'm actually a licensed acupuncturist. And ever since I was started on patrol, I always gravitated towards the homeless population. And C-shift, which is overnight shift, we had large pockets of homelessness in downtown Miami, and I always gravitated and engaged with the homeless and always sought to seek assistance for the homeless.
And I read about something in your background that perhaps led you to that.
Yeah, my parents, both my parents are Holocaust survivors, and, you know, they passed now, but I remember growing up and all the tragic stories that I heard happened to them, and my grandparents were, you know, were killed, and my both sides of my family's uncles and extended family were all killed, and it wasn't for anything that they did, it was just who they were, and I think that played a strong point of my passion to help the most needy.
And Captain Scott Russell, you and your background, I see you're also a pastor.
Yeah, I serve at Church by the Glades. Was in career law enforcement with Fort Lauderdale Police Department until 2006, and went into full-time vocational pastoring until 2013, where I was asked to come back in and work with at the Broward Sheriff's Office in the fields that I worked with, which was homeless outreach and crisis intervention, the Memphis Model Crisis Intervention Team that I implemented in Fort Lauderdale. So they wanted me to come back and head up those initiatives that the sheriff wanted to address here under his administration. So here I am back in law enforcement and, again, working on those social issues that basically I feel like I've been, you know, it's called the regulation and found some effective ways of helping people to get back up on their feet again and to get reengaged in the game of life.
And, Cat Hammer, you seem very motivated in your job. What's your background?
Well, you know, I became a social worker after dropping out of high school and running away from home and making lots of bad choices, and luckily I got into college early. But it really influenced how I perceive the world and that we have to do a better job about taking care of people. And a lot of I feel very lucky that I had some of the supports I did, but I don't think everyone does, and they don't necessarily come at the right time.
Right. And in Palm Beach County, you have a lot of statistics there. First of all, the Lewis Center, how many people can you accommodate there?
Well, I like to clarify that Palm Beach County is huge. I can't remember. It's like 2,700 square miles. And there is no emergency shelter. So what we have is what I oversee is interim housing beds, which is a form of shelter for folks who can, with the assumption that they can be rapidly rehoused. I do have six crisis beds, three for women and three for men, where I work with community partners, whether it's to bring someone on the street for a couple days to shower, get some food and get some new clothes, whether it's law enforcement drop-offs, whatever we can do to support. Unfortunately, there's no emergency shelter, so we say no a lot, and I have to say it's the hardest thing I've ever done.
It seems amazing with all the rural area and the migrants, cold snaps and things, there's not any designated
emergency
shelter there.
And Captain Russell, do you, when you are dealing with individuals, are they mostly stopgap measures, or do you try to provide for long-term stability for them?
What our deputies are assigned to doing and what we've done and found that the best practices is that we act as advocates, and in some cases we do a little bit of case management by following up to see if our person has been able to get into a shelter, whether it's the person's issues or substance abuse, whether they're mental health, or whether they're just needing to be housed. They've got a job, let's say. They're struggling to get first, last, and security, and all they need is that short-term help to end their cycle. So, you know, it depends on that person's need. We do a needs assessment, our information into HMIS. It's our homeless management information system. We get them registered through 211, which is our first call for help. Then we work on their housing. We advocate. We go to court. In some cases, letting the judge know if this person was released, that we will connect them and we have a bed for them with a mental health, a behavioral health persons, have a bed ready for them. So the judge then will release them to that facility. So we do a lot of I guess we'd say some longer term, but, you know, in the immediate, it's that going out, making that one-on-one contact, especially with the more chronic, who a lot of times tend to be more service resistant, and build that rapport, build that trust, maybe take them up to a shelter because they're fearful of the unknown. They've never been to one, mm-hmm. and let's do lunch there. you know. So it's a little bit more entailed than just riding around and you know, picking somebody up and dropping them off at a shelter. Those are the chronic who are, the emergency who are very easy to help because they're desperate for it.
Let's take a telephone call or two. First up, we have Tom in Del Rey. Tom, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
All right. I was. I want to thank first the guests that you have on. You're doing great work. I was homeless. It was actually in a different county here in Florida, but I was homeless for about 3 years. But initially, I was homeless for a year before I sought help. And I pretty much drank myself into homelessness on top of psychological problems that I'm dealing with now. And I just want to bring out into the conversation that the VA has a pretty good outreach program as well. And some veterans don't want to ask for help. And sometimes they're less afraid to ask for help in going to the VA, and the VA has that's how I came off the streets was through the VA, and they approach it in a similar way to the captain was explaining, where it's dual diagnosis, and they get them stabilized, they get us stabilized, and then treat the underlying issues.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Well, what was your experience like out there? Was there a lot of fear for your safety? What was it like?
No, initially I was afraid for my safety, but I hid from homeless people too, probably out of that fear. My experience was really telling to me, because I never in a second thought I'd ever be homeless. And the reactions that you get from everyday people is alarming. It's like you're an alien when they look at you.
That's so common. No one thinks they're going to be homeless, and yet they are.
But, Tom, so you encountered, what was it, contempt? I mean, was it that you were a failure? That was their attitude?
Yeah, it was people, the feeling that I got most of the time was they were waiting for me to ask them for something. So they didn't want to get eye contact with you for that reason. Mm. Even when I'd go into a 7-Eleven to get some water or something, even the people in there or the cashiers wouldn't want to look at you. Business owners didn't want you near their establishments. And you know, I understood where they were coming from, because Not all homeless people are the best citizens, and I'm sure the captain can, but a lot of them are sick as well. So,
right.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for your call and for your service, Officer Burnett.
You
wanted to say
something? Well, in Miami, you know, in the county, in the city, and the city has the majority of the homeless population of Miami-Dade County. We are about 63-65% of the homeless population of Miami-Dade County is in the city of Miami. And it's a collaborative effort. It's the, you know, Miami Homeless Trust, it's the VA, it's our own outreach, it's the City of Miami Police Department. We're all working together to better the lives of the homeless. And I agree that we have to go out every day to build a rapport with the homeless and try to get them into shelter. In Miami-Dade County, we do have emergency shelter. Besides the 75 beds that we have in the police department that is purchased by the City of Miami, we do have emergency shelter. We do have a waiting list, but we have accommodations to put somebody in shelter. So if they are eligible for permanent housing, transitional housing, rapid rehousing, in the meantime, they could get a shave, a shower, get case management, medical care, dental care, psychological
There's
services.
There's non-governmental shelters as well.
Correct.
Like the Camillus House.
That is correct. And unlike most or all other municipalities, Miami-Dade County is a little unique, because besides getting the federal dollars for HUD, which is, you know, gravitating towards permanent housing, which have to meet certain criteria, eligibility and stuff, that Miami-Dade County has a 1% beverage tax, which large $400,000 sales restaurants that does business can that money goes as discretionary money, so that's used towards other things than permanent housing, and we have a little flexibility there to help.
So it's much more effective not being locked into a certain spending.
Well, the issue is with permanent housing, there's inventory issues, for example. So what do you do with a homeless individual which needs help, needs that compassion, needs that medical care? Do we continue to say no? Do we wait for that apartment to be built in 3 years from now? What do we do with the homeless individual? What kind of services can we give them today and still plan for that permanent housing for tomorrow?
Let's reintroduce our guests. We're talking about the homeless populations in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. We're getting help for them. That was Police Officer James Bernot. He's the homeless coordinator and the senior executive assistant to Miami Chief of Police. And also with us is Catherine Cat Hammer, licensed clinical social worker, senior director of the Lewis Center in Palm Beach County, and also Captain Scott Russell from the Broward Sheriff's Department is on the homeless outreach team in the Youth and Special Services Division.
Are there transitional services in each of the counties where if someone, they get a foot in the door to make sure that they don't go back to being homeless, Kat?
Well, the Lewis Center, you know, the demand is such that if you're a part of the continuum of care, which every community has to have one if you receive HUD funding, which all sorts of agencies get together and partner. And with the intention of the Lewis Center is that we were going to serve these folks that could do transitional interim housing, which is a shelter, but it's not an emergency shelter. And the idea is that when people come in, that we assist them, they get employment, that they can save enough for a deposit.
Who do you work with to give them and get them employment?
We partner with the Lord's Place, which is another nonprofit organization that serves the homeless in Palm Beach County. And we work with them, and people get employment. When people get employment and they save money, we can help them get into apartments by paying their security deposit, maybe giving some financial assistance for a period of time. It sort of depends on each person's situation, but there's not a lot of resource. That's the unfortunate part. There's not a lot of affordable housing, and a lot of our folks are making minimum wage. There are exceptions to that.
Are they given supervision also to make sure that they're going to work, that they're saving their money, that maybe they're going to their 12-step meetings?
Well, we don't force anyone. I mean, you know, again, going back to treatment has to be something that people sort of engage. And there's when you talk about a particular model that Florida, most counties have adopted now, which is housing first. And the assumption is that you don't have to be sober, but that people deserve housing, then actually make more progress towards taking care of their mental health, co-occurring disorders, and their trauma histories when they have a home to do that. So in terms of the rapid rehousing, we do follow up with case management. We don't force people to do anything. Most people want to stay employed. Most people want to stay in their homes. So we do follow and make sure that people are able to do that. If there's a slight setback, what can we do to prevent that? Can we help with the maybe a partial payment towards the rent so they can maintain their housing? But if you're talking about housing first, that's a different type of model. And my concern a little bit, it varies in each county. In our county, I think that we need to do more around the wraparound services to be effective, because the chronically homeless, who are people who are going to be eligible for housing first, tend to have really complicated mental health substance abuse issues and are not engaged in traditional treatment, and that we need to partner and build relationships and get people to focus on what it is important to them and what their intrinsic motivation is versus us telling people what to do. Hope that made sense.
We have an emailer. I don't know what county Michael is in, but he wants to know if someone with no ID and a drug habit can get help.
Of course, many of the homeless don't have ID.
Okay.
So that's not a criteria to get help or to get into shelter at all.
And the same with you, Captain Russell?
It's very important, and we do everything we can to help them get their identification back. We have people that are tasked with just doing that, reaching out to get a birth certificate from their hometown, then to work with the state of Florida in producing a Florida ID card. I just want to also just to interject on what Catherine was talking about as far as for the transitional. Most every continuum of care is moving away from transitional housing and focusing their dollars, as per HUD, as she indicated, towards the rapid rehousing and model. but supportive housing as well. There's two different types. You got the based on the vulnerability index, which we every county has and does during the point in time count in Broward, Dade, Palm Beach. So we take the most vulnerable and the most chronicity again is so important, and they score, and if they score at a certain height or a certain level, which is above a 12, then they get those first houses and housing that comes available. So that is very, very important not to forget that the housing ready model is the model of the past. We really didn't find it to be as successful as we thought it would be, but now to move to the housing first model, bringing that person who has substance abuse, mental health, getting them housed, and then bringing the resources to them is we're finding is the best practices. HUD recognizes it. The federal government recognizes it as a best practice. Okay. What they're sending the money to is those continuums that are doing that. That does not negate the responsibility we have for not allowing homeless persons that are in crisis and in need to languish on the streets and not get the help. So we kind of have to do a balancing act, and we still have, again, emergency shelter, transitional shelter, but our main focus and all continuums has to be the permanent supportive housing and rapid rehousing models.
Officer Burnett?
Yeah, I agree. The continuum of care is moving towards that type of model. But the challenges that we face, and I think in Palm Beach and Broward and Dade County, we face similar challenges, is that you have many individuals that get benefits, Social Security, and their average Social Security check is $700 to $800 a month. And, you know, for $700 to $800 a month, and if they're not eligible to go into permanent housing and it's transitional housing, how can they afford that apartment?
Right.
Or it's not only unemployment, it's underemployment. I believe in Miami-Dade County, I think you need to make between $17 and $19 an hour to afford a single bedroom apartment. Mm. And as the disparity between property values go up and wages are stagnant, individuals who want help to get off the street just cannot afford to get off the street.
And we'll take some more calls. Next up, Bob in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Bob.
Hi. Hey. I was involved in Occupy Fort Lauderdale in 2011, and we met with Fort Lauderdale City and Broward County officials several times on the homeless issue. And Fort Lauderdale kind of offers kind of minimal services for them. And one city official told me off the record, he said it's not that they couldn't offer good services or better services, but they were legitimately concerned that if they had really good homeless services in Fort Lauderdale, that the area might get flooded by homeless people from around the country migrating here once the word got out that Fort Lauderdale was a good place to be if you were homeless. I was just wondering if any of your guests had heard of this or had any thoughts on this, and I'll listen off the air.
Well, okay. You referred to Fort Lauderdale, so Captain Scott Russell first.
Yes, that's absolutely, and that's common no matter where you go. You know, build it, they will come kind of mentality. And the way that we've addressed that in Fort Lauderdale, even when I was back with the Fort Lauderdale Police Department when we first started, and it's kind of been the model that we've worked with, is that, again, proof of residency is kind of one of the things we want to look for and look at. How long have you been here? Well, they say they don't have identification. Well, you ask them, I've been here all my life. What high school did you attend? And just having some basic information about your community, you're going to know if this person is a person who's been here for a while, who's established themselves. Just the basic information. So we want to make sure that we help first and foremost those people in Broward County that are residents of Broward County as best we can establish that. Then, just like in a family, you know, you're gonna meet the needs of your family member, your immediate family, your children, before you reach out to your cousins. And the cousins would be if we had, you know, all our beds were fit, or not all our beds, but all of our homeless for Fort Lauderdale were used up, beds were used up, we would then would say Broward and Palm Beach. If somebody just had migrated from Palm Beach to Broward, then they would have access to those. And then, of course, throughout the state, and if somebody came in from out of country, we had assets that were available, we would give it to them as well. But let me tell you, I've been working in this a long time. We've never, ever been able to turn around and say we've got empty beds at the end of the day and we could help out Broward or we could help out Dade. We still typically will have people standing, as Captain says, we have to say, look, there's no bed tonight, but meet with me tomorrow. Let me help you get in tomorrow. We'll see if that bed becomes available and that will help. So the issue of worrying about we're going to attract a ton of people from all over the country, I don't think that that will happen, because if they get here, they'll find out that they're on a waiting list, just like a lot of other people that do that, and they turn around and go back home. And we do have reunification programs to help if people have family that say they live in Texas, and that we call that family member, and they say, if you can get, you know, George out to Texas, he can sleep on our couch and he won't be homeless, but we can't afford to pay. We'll pick up the dime and help that person reunify and with his family members.
Catherine Hammer.
Hi. I sort of wanted to jump in here, and I just need to acknowledge that I'm an employee of Gulfstream Goodwill, and our Lewis Center is a collaboration with also Adopt a Family, the county, the Homeless Coalition, the Lord's Place. One of the things about this idea, one of the things I do think is a myth, and I think when we were talking off the air before we started, is myths about homelessness and why
what
people come. You know, the idea is people are fearful that people will come to New York City because we have many more entitlements and do a lot more for folks when they are lower income. I think the idea is because it's such a nice, warm place, people do fear this, and there is a real fear. Do
if
I?
If you're
think
going
that,
to be on the street, you'd rather say be in Miami than Detroit.
I think being on the street anywhere is difficult,
right.
And
right.
That's the truth. And I don't think that we have to fear that, but I do think that is a lack of education in our communities that continues,
right.
That people will come here just to have like a vacation.
Right.
The truth is people are already here and they're homeless. And this varies each day. For every person you house, you're having people who are not housed. I think that we have to look at this economically. If Florida is fifth in the state in terms of economic disparity between the 1% and 99%, we need to be concerned. The factors that influence whether people can get full-time jobs or can only have part-time jobs, that it is the face of homelessness is complicated. We do have chronic homeless, and we do have crisis homeless,
right.
And it's ongoing. It shifts and it continues.
Captain Russell, what is the BSO homeless outreach number to call for a deputy to immediately respond? That's from Michael, an email.
Basically, it's not 911, but the number that you could call, it's a non-emergency number in Broward, and you can reach out and call 954-765-4321, just kind of backwards, and that's a central hub that then would reach to you could get to a dispatcher, non-emergency, and a deputy would respond to assist somebody that is homeless.
And is it illegal to give money to them?
In Broward, mm-hmm. There are certain areas that would be illegal to give money out. It wouldn't be the illegal giving money out. It's the guy walking in the street to solicit people in certain intersections.
So there's no panhandle areas, is that what you're
well,
saying?
Well, there's certain areas that you can. The big problem that we have, and listen, this is a public safety issue, it's not a homeless issue, and to be honest with you, our numbers will show about 60% of the panhandlers on the street are not homeless. They're near homeless, or they're those who have, you know, disability income, but they're living in a house situation. But no, number one, this is an interesting topic. In vehicular accidents that involve pedestrians and bicyclists in the nation, but Broward County is number one in the state. So we're trying to address that at a level that we're trying to get no more firefighters out in these busy intersections with a boot trying to solicit money, raise money. Little League football players walking around selling peanut M&Ms
right.
in the street. So the homeless and the near homeless are also affected by that law. No newspaper sales vendors in the street because of that public safety issue. And it's just other than that, people can ask for money. And if people want to give money to somebody that's in need, that's their prerogative. This is United States, you know.
Okay, that is Captain Scott Russell from Broward County. Also with us, Police Officer James Burnett from the Miami-Dade County and Catherine Cat Hammer from Palm Beach County speaking about the homeless and City of Miami Police. Okay. Oh, City of Miami Police. That's right. Okay. We'll be right back after this break.
And we return. It's 47 minutes past 1 o'clock. Topical Currents today with Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, And from Palm Beach County, Catherine Cat Hammer. We're talking about the homeless, of course, by the way. Also, Captain Scott Russell of the Broward Sheriff's Office and Miami Police Officer James Bernat, Senior Executive Assistant to the Police Chief in the City of Miami. And he's also the department's homeless coordinator. We can take a few more calls. Let's go to Diango. Diango in Miami, is that correct?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. That is correct.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
So first of all, I'd like to say thank you. I'm a long-time listener, and I'd like to say thank you for talking about such an important topic, especially in a city such as Miami, which is undergoing vast economic change, massive gentrification, et cetera, which has obviously led to a spike in the amount of individuals that would qualify as crisis homelessness.
Right.
I, myself, am 27 years old, and for a period of 8 months, was forced to live out of my vehicle because I fit into that category. My question to the panel is the following, and I'd also like to say thank you to the panel, by the way. I appreciate our law enforcement officers not just policing the streets, which in itself is a great service to our society, but also being outreach officers with members of society and the community. My question is the following. How do you, as a homeless individual, whether you're a chronic homeless individual or you fall into crisis homelessness, how do you deal with the inherent barriers that are placed there by the system itself? In other words, if you don't qualify for housing because you don't have substance abuse problems and you continue to get placed on a list, or there is no list for housing because housing is such an issue in a city such as Miami, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with individuals that perhaps really aren't looking out for your best interest, even though this is a field that they've chosen to work in? And that's going to lead into my second question, which is also, I guess, more of a problem. How do you deal with corruption that you see and inherent problems that you're witnessing within the network of support that is supposed to be there to help individuals that are homeless? And I ask this question because I've seen many, many problems here within Miami, specifically in the city of Homestead, in regards to short-term programs that are meant to house homeless temporarily because they can pay 30% of a stable income that they have coming in, whether that's Social Security or SSI.
Right. Okay. Diango, let City of Miami Police Officer James Burnett respond to you to
some of this.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, thank you for your questions. You know, Miami-Dade County, and I mentioned outside the police department, we have the City of Miami Outreach, which are City of Miami employees, but they jurisdiction is the whole county. So they would go from Homestead all the way to Aventura, the north part of the county, and from Prome all the way to Miami Beach, and Miami Beach has their own outreach. It's all under the same continuum of care. So whatever programs one would qualify for, whether it's traditional housing, permanent housing, or emergency shelter, they're the ones that would bring one in here. The challenge we have is the demand is greater than the amount of resource that's available. In other words, even though we have emergency shelter in the City of Miami, we do have a waiting list to get into shelter through our outreach. It's just the way it is. And I keep on going back, the underlying causes of homelessness needs to be addressed. We talk about permanent housing, but then we have individuals that don't meet HUD's criteria for what they call chronic homelessness. We have individuals that can't get into permanent housing because it's an inventory issue. There's individuals that can't get into permanent housing because maybe they wish not to go to permanent housing. And so what do we do with the individuals that don't meet those criteria? So to address your question is that there is not a permanent solution to everybody's problem, okay? And that, may I ask this caller a question? Did you try our... Okay.
No, he's not on there anymore.
Oh, he's not. Okay.
But what I wanted to address, though, is he mentioned that there was some corruption involved in some of the dealings with short-term housing. Catherine Hammer, is there a way that people could possibly profit from homelessness, bureaucratic way?
He's alleging that, and I surely don't know enough about Miami, but of course there's a problem potentially anywhere, but the truth is there's just not enough resources, as Captain Burnett said. There's just not enough resources, and the demand exceeds it. And when he asked what is a good answer to help people? I don't know if there's a good answer when you're facing homeless or if you're on the street or whether it's due to crisis or chronic and you're getting help and there's not enough help. But I don't think that this is about corruption. I think this is about us needing to look at issues like he talked about, gentrification, racial disparity, poverty, to at least address some of the crisis and develop affordable housing. Because I think that's the theme. If you're talking about prevention, you're talking about how do people have homes that they can afford? And it may not be fair market value that's pushed up by folks with more resources.
Okay.
Let's take another caller. JP, North Miami Beach. Hey there.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
How are you?
Good, thank you. So just to piggyback off of what Bonnie was just saying, I think you basically took my point out of my mouth. I'm 34 years old. I have two kids. I'm a single mom, and I'm now living inside of my car. I go take a shower at the gym, and, you know, and I shuttle my kids to school, and they kind of don't really notice. They kind of think it's fun. But I just, you know, I'm working. I'm college educated. I'm working on my master's, and I still cannot afford housing. You know, I'm paying my car note, I'm paying my insurance, I'm paying my other bills, I'm feeding us. I can't afford a home just because I can't make ends meet. How do you bridge that gap where somebody's working, I'm not on any drugs, you know, not abusing anything, I'm just not able to make those ends meet?
Officer.
Bonnie, can I address that?
Okay, yes.
Please
Captain
do.
Russell. Yeah, go ahead.
Listen, I hear that is a common theme in our Tri-County area. Is affordable housing and workforce ready housing. You know, we're a hospitality driven community, and we're pricing ourselves out of the ability to bring in the people that are the service providers. So one of the things I book magazines I read, and I would encourage people, you could get on it and find out what's going on, is just the governing. Most of your city managers get this, and it talks about those topics. And almost every time I open up that magazine, go to look at, and I'm looking at an article that I made a copy of, Why Affordable Housing is Hard to Build. And that's out of that. It's under Politics and Policy by an Alan Ehrenholt. And there are so many, you know, reasons, and it goes into different cities. Arlington, Virginia, they're struggling with the same thing that we're struggling with affordable housing, workforce-ready housing. You know, as I think it was James, Officer James Barnett, stated that, you know, poverty is again the first cousin to homelessness. They run hand in hand. We're struggling to keep people in a house situation, but yet we're pricing ourselves out of that. So those are things I think you could have for a whole nother show, digging into affordable housing and what can we do to fix that. And that would certainly be something I would recommend that we're all going to have to address, because that's going to increase the number of homeless people out on the streets. But the number one resource any individual has is themselves, their fortitude to push forward even during some, you know, adverse times, and working the system and staying after. You've heard the squeaky wheel gets the oil. If you're constantly there waiting to be helped, you're going to get that help. It may take some time because we don't have an inventory, an endless supply. We have a finite supply of shelter beds. But I would recommend if that young lady is in Broward County, she could call 211, and in 211, that's first call for help, and they should link her with our Hope South Florida, which works with our families and would be able to help her, guide her, direct her as she's navigating through this homeless condition that she's in.
Right. Well, Captain Russell, she's actually in Miami. She's in North Miami Beach. So, Officer Burnett.
Yeah. So, if I could suggest some resources, if she's seeking employment, she could reach out to Career Source. They're out of Lindsay Hopkins.
Okay. JP, are you listening?
Yeah, I am listening. Okay.
Yes.
I am working.
Okay.
Currently.
You are working. And
I am currently.
And if you need rental assistance, or if you're living out of your vehicle, let me give you the 800 number to our outreach, and you need to call them and explain your situation and see what programs they have and what kind of resources that you may be available to you and your family, okay?
Okay, please.
The number is 1-877
okay.
994
All right.
4357.
Thank you.
Okay, and we wish you the best.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And we apologize to the callers and emailers we couldn't get to. City of Miami Police Officer James Berna, the Homeless Coordinator and Senior Executive Assistant to the Miami Police of Chief of Police, thank you very much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Again, that number
is 1-877-994-4357.
And Catherine Cathammer, licensed clinical social worker and the senior director at the Lewis Center for the Homeless in Palm Beach County. Kat, any contact information for you?
Yes, please. If you're hoping to get services, please call 561-904-7900, 561-904-7900 in Palm Beach County.
Okay, and Captain Scott Russell, the homeless outreach team with the Broward County Sheriff's Department and the Youth and Special Services Division, contact information?
I would tell anybody that's looking for any kind of help in social services within Broward County is the first call for help is 211, and they will be the that's the entry point, and they will connect you with the social service that most suits your needs.
Okay, thank you all for being with us.
And thanks for tuning in. Our program was produced by Polly Landis, technical guidance by online coordinator Jason Zabka. Richard Ives is our lead producer. Tomorrow, we examine how to best cope with constant anxiety and worry. We'll chat with University of North Carolina psychiatric professor Reed Wilson. This is Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.